take this wonderful law of universal reflection and just sit in it for a moment and reflect within it and explore just a little bit of the possibilities that it brings forth. Like every other law, it too can be prismed through the seven, and then through the seven times seven, and then through the characteristics of that particular synonymous term. And as you all may know or not know, when we're on this dimension, or this level, so to speak, we're not held to numeral characteristics. We're not held to the timeless, spaceless characteristics that we have used before we visited this particular level. On this level, we are allowed those characteristics that have a more human touch, that are transitional characteristics, that are the way in which the divine being appears to the human. And therefore, in being able to utilize these characteristics that are a touch more human, certainly they reach closer to our hearts, closer to where we are coming from, closer to what appear to be our misconceptions and our problems and our need to translate our universe. So to that, I would like to choose a particular synonymous term, and I have not preconceived what that might be. I'm just hearing now, maybe soul would be nice, since it seems to be a characteristic not greatly understood. In fact, in the universe, probably greatly misunderstood, in that individuals that call themselves people feel truly that they have a soul of their own. Now, intrinsically, this is accurate, and it is true, if taken in context of the macro model, if taken in context with the whole, where they realize that it is, and they are, a facet of the whole. But not true if taken independently of the whole, in that they would have a private soul that could be here or go on after them or whatever. So possibly this is a nice synonymous term to explore with this exercise for a little bit here. Now let's see if there is reflection going on, and in the midst of that divine reflection, every facet is giving to every other the whole of being, then it would be that the facetry of my being, or that which I am, is able to give unto myself that which being is, and in this instance, the soul of that being. So therefore, really, I have the capability deep within myself to supply the soul qualities for myself. Now, what are the soul qualities? Well, we've used identity a lot because it's a timeless, spaceless quality. So certainly I could give unto myself the divinity of my nature. I could define for myself the characteristics of my nature. And it would behoove me to do so. Not just to do a little rote exercise here where I say, I give unto myself the qualities of being. No, no, do it. Give unto yourself the qualities of being. give unto, in this instance, myself, the quality of soul and the qualities of soul, give unto myself the divinity of my ego, not the personal ego, but to really provide for myself the divine ego of soul, thereby never to rob myself by believing that I could give myself a private ego. I could give unto myself, and you'll love these now. Let's come into some of these more human characteristics. I could give unto myself balance. What a treasure. And freedom. And joy. And satisfaction. It's wonderful. So let's do some of that. Let's choose joy, just for fun. We haven't exercised so far with anything that's had that human a touch. Let's do it. Let's see that in the fatherhooding of being, in that wonderful reflection, it is possible for me to give myself the joy of soul. The joy of that wonderful definition of my identity. The joy of the divinity of my nature. And thereby to give that same joy to every other facet of the universe, to every other so-called individuality of the universe, to just see every individual as joyful, and to see that it in truth is giving unto itself that joy, irrespective as to whether I give it to it or not, that it is really giving that joy unto itself. Because it is giving itself the divinity of its true nature, and defining that nature for itself, and that really it is providing every other facet of the universe with that deep sense of joy and with its deep divine nature. So then you can see we just have a wonderful universe that's filled with the reflection of joy and happiness because it is really defined by the nature of the being that created it. And then I can go further and see that that part of my being that is able to sonship is able to acknowledge that joy for itself. It's able to acknowledge the definition of its, the true nature of its being that gives it that joy. And it's able to acknowledge that joy for every other facet of the universe. And then just to see that every other facet is really conscious of its own inner joy, conscious of the divinity of its nature that gives it that deep joy. And that it's conscious of that for every other facet of the universe. That collectively there is a wonderful reflection going on where every individuality is recognizing the joy that comes from being identified correctly. That every individuality in the universe is conscious of the true nature of its being and therefore is supremely joyful. And I have the wonderful privilege to acknowledge that for myself and for the universe. And just think, if we all were conscious of that and we were all doing that, we would really be living in an atmosphere of joy, a transparency of joy. And then to go further, to see that I have the capability of motherhooding that, of nurturing and cherishing and accepting my joy, accepting the joy of soul for myself, accepting the joy of the divinity of my nature for myself, and accepting that joy of soul for every other facet of the universe. And then to just realize that every other facet of the universe, whether it realizes it or not, whether it appears to be doing it or not, intrinsically is accepting the joy of the universe of soul for itself. It is accepting the divinity of its nature so deeply that it accepts the joy of its being, and it's nurturing it and cherishing it for itself and for every other facet of the universe. So you have this incredible holographic crystal that is just reflecting the divinity of the nature of soul. It's just abounding, reverberating with joy, because it's projecting the image of joy, it's acknowledging the image of joy, and it's accepting and embracing the image of joy, the quality, not the image really, the whole inner quality of joy for itself and for every other facet. So you just have a reverberation of a universe that is defined in the nature of God, and thereby is joyful, is singing the praises of itself and the divinity of being, is singing like the birds because it is joyful. It's wonderful to do this. That's just one tiny, tiny example of the possibilities that exist in this exercise. So by all means, treat yourself and treat the universe and supply that which we really are for yourself and for the universe. And acknowledge for yourself and for the universe what is real and what you are and what it is. And accept and nurture and hold and cherish for yourself and for every other facet of the universe its true being, the divinity of the nature of its being. And don't take shortcuts. Do it through the 7x7 and do it through the characteristics, the numeral ones, the day ones, through every characteristic that represents the seven. Because it is just such an incredible experience to give yourself the intelligence of mind, the substance and reality of spirit, the happiness and identity of soul, the structure and system and harmony of principle, the organization of principle, the life, the existence, the eternality, the method, the energy, the vitality of life, the standard, the ideal, the wonderful calculations that are going on in truth, its ability to calculate accurately and correctly, health, to give yourself and the universe health, not just physical health, health in everything, total wholeness. Oh, it's wonderful. And then for us to give to ourselves and the universe peace, completion, fulfillment, and all of those wonderful, holistic, integrated qualities of love, it is worth every moment of your attention. And it is worth it because it not only translates your individual universe, but really does have an impact on the collective universe. So it is a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. And with that, we're going to transit to the next position, the position that we call the law of structured understanding, the law of scientific understanding. It's a wonderful place value. As you know, it comes forth from the one upstairs, from that which is going on in the absolute dimension, from that place value that we imbibed and took a deep look at, that was entitled the law of pre-established form. That place value where we were able to take a deep look at the cybernetic model and see the workings of that model and the overforming that was going on in that model. Now, truly, that's going on here too. But now we're going to take a look at how that looks when it comes to the human, when it transforms to the human. How does it affect the human? How is that place value experienced in the human? Consequently, we have, through scientific understanding, through structured understanding. It's very logical, right? Because if you have in the absolute dimension a cybernetic model going on and operating and calculating and forming and overforming, then on this dimension you really have the same thing, but you have the perception of that. You have a scientific understanding of what's going on. Always as you appear to descend the levels, then what we're always doing is putting on stronger lenses to see more detail of the operation. And that's all we're doing here too, is seeing how that model is cybernetically operating and thereby how it is overforming and how that affects that which I am in its transfiguration process. So you will notice that after this law, in its essence, I have another page entitled Exploring the Law of Structured Understanding Through Exercise. And as with the others, we will proceed forth from the most holistic point of view, then reducing that point of view closer and closer and closer to the human understanding. And so, we will begin with, within the omni activity of the deep structure of being, being is enfolding the patterns of its being, causing them to undergo a transmutation of appearance. Now, I know to first hearing, that's a lot. But when you just sit and consider it deeply, I know that it will have great, enlightened, scientific meaning for you. And as a help here, if I can locate it, I will give you the definition that I have in the little glossary at the back of the book of ENCODE. To transfer as a body of information from one system of communication to another to convert a message into a code. And enfolding, let's see here. To enfold, which is what we're talking about here specifically, to embrace, encircle, to cause to be embraced endlessly, endless embracing. So as that cybernetic model then is operating, it is endlessly embracing the models of its being in their operation. It is endlessly embracing the patterns of its being, causing them to undergo a transmutation of appearance. In so doing, it taps into the wellspring of its being, allowing its qualities to resonate and revelate within its being. And those are new terms, even resonate, in that I don't mean it in just the common sense of the word. And you will find those also defined in the glossary. I believe you will find it under mode, and then under mode, a subsection called Rhea mode, which explains the usage that I have of the Rhea mode language that David Baum created in his book, Wholeness and the Implicate Order. The Rhea mode was coined by Mr. Baum by combining the Greek word rheo, meaning to flow, with mode, a manner or form of being or a way of doing something, in order to develop a language in which movement has first priority in our thinking, allowing the verb to play a primary role rather than the noun. You see, Mr. Baum, who is a physicist and who worked with Einstein, is really catching this science vertical, and through his scientific understanding is seeing that we are getting caught freeze-framing in the nouns and the adjectives, freeze-framing on objects. And he has seen that in truth, we live in a universe that is a flowing mode, a dance, he calls it, that is always, in a sense, of eternal unfolding, or as he says, enfolding. And he has really caught it, because he has really been transparent to the law of structured understanding, and even more, to the law of pre-established form. He has really been transparent to this vertical when he has brought forth his theories, which he then applies very much to the physical universe. But it's wonderful. He has all of his scientists that work close around him going around speaking Rhea mode language. And I haven't used very much of it in this talk, but this is very appropriate place to use it. And so I define here for you my use of resonate, Rhea mode language I have here, altering the noun reason in order to convey a resonant state of reason. So it isn't just reason as the human would look at the term to reason intellectually, but beings resonating reasoning ability. It's very much an operative ability within being and something that being is doing at that point. And then to revelate, Rhea mode language also, altering the noun revelation in order to convey the self-revelatory capacity of being. Okay? So we will get back here then to our statement that in order to do this, being taps into the wellspring of its being, allowing the qualities of its being to resonate and revelate within its being. It then revelates the specific calculations or configurations, and the definition of relevate, Reimode language also, to re-elevate, meaning to lift into attention, so that the content thus lifted stands out in relief. Okay? So it's being's ability to bring something to the focus of its attention, allowing it to stand out in relief against all the other qualities of its being. Not that it isn't conscious of all of it simultaneously, but its ability to bring forth certain configurations and allow them to come to the focus of its attention in relief. Okay? So it's wonderful language. Now we'll go back to this second position. It then relevates or brings up to the focus of its attention in relief the specific calculations or configurations of its consciousness, that it may reconfigure, restructure them in order to bring out the new pattern or the new form, which it then enfolds, embraces, encircles, into the whole of its being, where it proceeds to give to the whole its unique patterning, confirms its relationship to the collective patterning, and integrates into the general holography with harmony and love, forever playing its part in the hollow movement of the model of being. Now, I'm very aware that that was a new journey for everybody. And I'm very aware that that's an entirely new way of looking at the law of structured understanding. But if you will have followed what I was doing, I certainly first was dwelling in the position of the first branch of the candlestick, which stands for the word, which stands for the nature of being, or the seven. And at that position, we were considering the wellspring of being, which was resonating and revelating within its own being, within its own being. Then you will recognize the second position, or that of the second branch of the candlestick, or that of the Christ, or that of the law of transformation, as standing for that position, then, where being is relevating, or bringing to the focus of its attention, the specific calculations or configurations of its consciousness in order to allow them to reconfigure, restructure, in order to bring out the new form or the new pattern. Right? Then we went on and we considered the third branch of the candlestick, that which conforms to the vertical of Christianity, that which conforms to the law of universal reflection, where we noted that it then enfolded or embraced into the whole of its being, where it then proceeded to give the whole its unique patterning. In other words, the new form was enfolded into the macro form, giving the whole a new sense of patterning, confirming its special relationship to the collective patterning of that macro model, and integrating it into the general holography. Yes? Then we went on to the fourth branch, or the main stem of the candlestick, represented by this law, represented by principle, represented by structured understanding, and saw that therefore it was then forever playing its part in the hollow movement, that wonderful cybernetics, of the model of being. So you see that it hasn't really been so difficult to follow that particular way of understanding scientifically. And I think since this is the scientific understanding, that it behooves us to understand what is happening there in the most scientific manner. And certainly the most scientific manner would be that manner that is consistent with the law of creativity, the law of transformation, the law of universal reflection, seen in one operation as the law of structured understanding. It would also be that understanding which is as consistent with scientific understanding in all senses of that word as possible. Therefore, the most concise, mathematical, impersonal, systematic, structured language that we can use, that will be the language that will aid us toward our scientific understanding of what is happening in that cybernetic model of our being and of the infinite model of being. So now let's take that and maybe get a little closer to that which we normally deal with, and also let's take it and view it then through its reflection of the seven too. So encoded from within these patterns are always the nature of the being that conceived them. What is that nature? We've only said it 1,000 times since we started. The nature of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. If that's the coding, then the patterns are being encoded with that pattern. Encoded from within these patterns, then, are the nature of the seven. Their form, second position, determined by the inner calculus that occurs within the consciousness of being. Their purpose, third position, and placement within the holographic matrix, predetermined and reflected by all. Fourth position, allowing them to consciously function as an interdependent model within the whole. I think that's easy, logical. Okay. Thus it is that the model or pattern of our being must be. Now we're getting into the act, right? We are not separate from this. So therefore, if being has encoded its models with its structure, then it has encoded us with that structure. So, thus it is that the model or pattern of our being must be encoded with the nature of being itself. It must be encoded with the seven, or with the word, the nature of being. that the model of our being must calculate in accord with the fourfold operation. If being calculates in accord with the four, that's imprinted within my being. In order to be scientific, I really must calculate in accordance with the fourfold operation of being. Discover our divine holographic relationship with all the other facets in order to fulfill love's design. That really gives me my assignment, doesn't it? First of all, it says, okay, you have to encode yourself with the seven. You want to have scientific understanding, you want to transfigure, you want to translate, I'll give you the method. It's very simple. You have to encode yourself with the seven. You have to operate in concordance with the four operations, or that way in which being operates. And you have to discover your divine holographic relationship with all the other factors of the universe. And then, it says, fourth and foremost, you have to operate in accord with the science and system of the governing principle of being. You have to operate, I have to operate, as a true micromodel, a true little micromodel, cybernetic model, within the infinite cybernetic model, within the divine infinite model of being. I must operate identically, and I must not control the operation. That's the whole key to the thing. The principle of being, which controls the operation of its whole model, which coordinates it and organizes it, that being controls and organizes the micromodel of my being. It determines what it's comprised of. It determines how it operates. It determines how it integrates with every other facet. It controls it. And if I'm not willing to relinquish control, forget it. The transfiguration will never appear to happen within my consciousness, because I won't be in accord with that overforming that's going on within being. I will be so asleep and snoring so loud that I will, in essence, have to go through this eternal millennium crisis that we have been going through. I will find myself so dormant that I'm in the mist, needing desperately to awaken. I will find myself just barely, possibly, awakening to the point where I can deal in legends, in history. I will just be back doing that. Just, you know, dormant. You just see, if you don't give way to the overforming that's going on in being, you're going to be condemned to cycle forever. You know, just annihilate yourself and start all over and cycle, cycle, cycle with all this very old millennium understanding. But I cannot believe that that could happen, because love is there, you see. All the time, that wonderful principle that is urging the scientific understanding of its universe, of its model, is, as you know, from the ultimate, the top of the column, is divine principle love. So it is a principle of love. And that principle of love is not going to let me get lost in the millenniums. It isn't going to let me get lost in the magic and mystification of the first millennium, or the confusion of the second millennium, or the personal selfhood, the clannishness, the tribalness, the national claiming awareness of the third millennium. It won't allow me to be clannish. It won't allow me to be tribal. It won't allow me to be national. No, it really is going to bring me to the fourth millennium, where I can deal with ideas and then recognize that those ideas are superior to matter, to the physical, and that they control it. And then it's going to urge me to the fifth millennium, where I can really identify with the qualities of God, and I can really allow those qualities to establish themselves in my consciousness well enough to demonstrate them in my individual experience. And then it is so gracious that it is going to take me into the sixth millennium, where I can be so collectively conscious that I can just deal with the science of ideas and just let them dance around in my consciousness and calculate and recalculate and form and overform and not be concerned about individual demonstration at all, but always know that the whole is demonstrating. Always be aware of the collective and that whatever is happening in my consciousness is happening in the collective. So if the dance of the ideas of science is going on within me, it's going on with every individuality, and that we have a conscious recognition, a collective recognition of that science of ideas. And then that love is so gracious that I know it's going to bring me into the seventh millennium. That millennium of comprehensive consciousness in which the tones of those ideas that have been dancing around within me are so deep and so great and so full that they will just live within my being to the point where the synonymous term itself, the order itself, where just those 15 root notions will be so loud in my being that nothing will be resounding except the model itself in all of its infinite organization and relationships. And that's the beauty of what's going on. It just is not going to allow me to wallow back in unscientific understanding. It isn't going to allow me to sit in mortal beliefs, the counterfeits of the seven which produce mortal existence. It isn't going to allow me to calculate humanly or at random and lead myself to false conclusions or the counterfeit of the four. It isn't going to allow me to sit in monographic isolation, a state of universal deflection in which I would reject the whole and likewise be rejected. It isn't going to allow me to operate independently of science and system and bury myself in those outmoded paradigms. It's not going to allow me to do that because the divine principle is love and it is operating. And because that model of being is operating, and because it is intrinsic to that which I am, it is operating within me, and it is going to enforce itself and ultimately enfold me and the pattern of my being within its being, allowing me to calculate infinitely in accordance with its being. And that's a wonderful view of those four laws on the Christian Science level. And so when we turn the tape, we will go to a consideration of the entire level, entitled for our usage, the Law of Causality, seeing that level in the same manner that we did the one in the absolute, all as a whole. In a sense, when we see the law of structured understanding, we have seen it a bit in a whole anyway, haven't we?